will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
One of the things about the I Have a Dream speech was it was Martin Luther King, obviously, talking about basic human needs and basic human cohesion. And the idea was that each one according to their need. And of course, we get rid of racism and we judge people by their character and not the color of their skin. The exact opposite of what's happening right now with respect to the United States Republican Party. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 282. I want to thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it. We are still inside of a shutdown, what they call a partial government shutdown. But good luck telling that to the people who are actively being ruined by it right now. It doesn't matter how damn partial it is. Now, we call it partial, obviously, because the military is off limits. We do not touch the military. That is, except for, I am now learning, the Coast Guard. Apparently, those guys are not getting paid. But really, everyone else with respect to the military is getting paid. So this interesting thing happens every year when it comes to Martin Luther King Day. In past years, Republicans have taken out billboards that have said, Martin Luther King was a Republican. Martin Luther King was for tax cuts. Martin Luther. And it's ridiculous, obviously. We have Martin Luther King Day. And when Martin Luther King Day was to become a holiday, very famously, Dick Cheney voted against it. But a whole lot of Republicans voted against having that day. Why do they want this man to get his own day on the calendar? Why do they want to be reminded about the social and civil rights upheaval that conservatives, this is what sort of turned conservatives, right? As LBJ said when he signed the Civil Rights Act, this will lose the South for the Democrats for a generation. And we're probably three generations out now. Conservative folks were unhappy about this. You go, well, Melvin, what about the Dixiecrats? I'm putting them all in the same boat. If you were for civil rights, then of course you wanted MLK to have a day. You wanted this reminder about the whites-only fountains. You wanted this reminder about the folks that were lynched. You wanted this reminder about those little girls that were blown up in that church. But always ones to try to change history, revising it as they go, trying to twist it to make it whatever they want to make it. This year being no exception, Mike Pence decided to step into the ring because we're in the middle of a government shutdown right now. And make no mistake, and I don't care who you are, what you believe, what party you belong to, the reason we are inside of a government shutdown right now is because President Dum Dum told his minions during the election that, because he didn't expect to get elected, that he was going to build a wall and that Mexico was going to pay for it. And now that he's president and he couldn't get the damn thing through his own Republican House and Senate, it is now the Democrats' fault that he can't secure funding for his wall. Is that because the Democrats won't let Mexico give us money? No, it's because he can't get money from the American people. And he can't because they just put a bunch of Democrats into the House of Representatives. But Mike Pence, not to be deterred, went ahead and stepped out there and says, you know what? President Trump is a lot like Martin Luther King.
You know, the hearts and minds of the American people today are thinking a lot about it being the weekend where we remember the life and work of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. One of my favorite quotes from Dr. King was, "Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy." You think of how he changed America. He inspired us to change through the legislative process to become a more perfect union. That's exactly what President Trump is calling on the Congress to do.
Mike Pence has never had a strong relationship with reality. And that's not about to change anytime soon. So the wall, that seems to be the only thing that they can think about right now is the wall. And the reason why the wall is so attractive is because it's really easy to understand. If they say to Trump supporters, we're going to start scanning more vehicles. We're going to get more drug-sniffing dogs. We're going to start searching more cargo containers that come over the border to look for people that are being smuggled in or drugs or for human trafficking. When they say stuff like that, the conservatives, the Trump supporters, I don't want to paint all conservatives, but definitely Trump supporters, they don't understand what the dang gum hell you're talking about. They don't understand that. But if you say a wall is going to keep out the brown folk. Oh, they get that. And so that's why the wall needs to be built. It doesn't make sense to anybody but Trump supporters. And MLK was not one for walls, as his son, Martin Luther King III, famously said after that quote came out from Mike Pence. His son said, "My father built bridges and not walls." And so I've got a piece of audio here. This is Martin Luther King in Germany in 1964 getting his first glimpse at the Berlin Wall.
This is your first glimpse at the wall, is it?
Yes, it is. This is my first glimpse of the wall.
And do you find it depressing?
Yes, I certainly do. It symbolizes the divisions of mankind.
Have you ever seen anything so disastrous as this?
Not really. Certainly there are the divisions that continue to exist, but when it's symbolized with an actual wall, it becomes very depressing.
You probably didn't catch it there, but there was a slight pause. She says, "Have you ever seen anything as depressing as this?" And he had to think for a minute. Not really. Because this man, obviously coming up during that time, and being a civil rights leader during that time, had seen some hellish things. But he's being interviewed, and the man needs to answer, and so he just was not really. And there you go. Shouldn't have to say it. Think everybody knows. Martin Luther King and the Republican Party. Nothing alike. Martin Luther King. Donald Trump. Nothing alike. You need some differences? One was a racist. One was not. One wants a wall. One was against walls. Just, oh, Melvin, come now. He's not racist. Look, let's stop playing the game of trying to coddle this racist toddler. And I like the fact that Bernie Sanders, they said, Bernie's trying to divide the people. No, he's not trying to divide the people. But we can't pretend that this isn't a thing anymore. And this is why Bernie Sanders had no problem, much as he didn't like to say it, in a statement on MLK Day, decided to call it exactly as it is.
Today we talk about justice, and today we talk about racism. And I must tell you, it gives me no pleasure to tell you that we now have a president of the United States who is a racist.
One of the things that we're being told about why the government is still shut down after all this time, why people aren't able to afford their medicine. Oh, and by the way, government workers that have government healthcare, they still have to pay for that healthcare. Those bills, even those bills, are still due even though they don't have their jobs. But we're being told there's a new slogan for the Republicans that Trump came up with, because Trump is a rhymer, part-time rapper, I suppose. He says, "If we build the wall, the crime will fall." That's the slogan that Republicans are using right now. And God damn it, it's so clever. Or they believe that it is so clever. And the idea is that it's all these Mexicans from the South that are bringing in all the drugs. And okay, that's racist. That's not how drugs get here. Do we have a drug problem in America? Yes. What's the number one drug problem that you hear about right now? Is it all the cocaine? No. It doesn't even seem to be the meth. And the potheads aren't really a problem. Sorry, I got love from my potheads. If you find that derogatory, well, does pot not go to your head? But we're being told that the brown people are bringing in the dang gum drugs, or all the drugs come from the South, and we're not doing... No. The drugs that you hear about the most, that we have the biggest problem with, are what? Think about it. The pharmaceuticals, are they not? Specifically, opioids. Opioids took my hero away. I'm a massive Prince fan. Prince was a baby, in my eyes anyway. Somewhere in his 50s. Took Prince away, but it's not just that. Like, that's the one person you can see. And Craig Melvin, the other day, on NBC News, decided to take this on, and I don't generally hear this kind of challenge coming from CNN or MSNBC. Definitely not Fox. But when I heard him say this, I said, oh, all right, you know what? I'm not even going to try to explain this to y'all. I think you get it. Craig Melvin on the real drug problem.
President Trump insists that his wall will stop opioids from flooding into the country and stem the crisis. But the New Yorker is refuting that claim, citing two factors. First, that the opioid epidemic began quite legally with a drug manufactured not by a Mexican cartel, but by an American pharmaceutical company. Second, that Mexican drug traffickers rely mainly on vehicles driven through official border checkpoints, something a wall really wouldn't do much
to. I believe to some degree that the president does have a personal interest in this. The president knows about addiction. He himself hasn't necessarily dealt with it, but he did lose his brother to alcoholism. And famously, he does not drink. So I think he does have a soft spot in here for this particular thing. And one of the first things that he did as president was he put this coalition together of lawmakers, of governors, of experts. What are we going to do about the drug problem? And one of the people that was on that panel is a congressman named Patrick Kennedy.
The real irony in all of this is that I served on President Trump's commission along with Governor Christie, Governor Cooper, Governor Baker, a couple others, Attorney General Bondi. And there was nowhere in our commission report that we should build a wall. We decided that the main points in this, as you point out, are the international mail distribution centers, as the DEA and many customs experts have already said. These are the places where we're most vulnerable in this country. With fentanyl, you know, just one first-class envelope of fentanyl can kill nearly 50,000 Americans. So we're not talking about this threat being a threat where they have to climb over a wall. You know, the U.S. Post, International Postal Service will do just fine.
Nowhere in their suggestions was it, after they held this entire thing about how to deal with the drug problem, nowhere, as the man said, was there that they should put up a wall. Now, this wasn't just a bunch of bleeding heart Democrats. It was the president, Governor Christie. There were other Republicans. There were Democrats. And of all the things they came up with, a wall was nowhere in there. But he has to push the wall. You say, well, if even the president knows that it's not going to do anything to help the drug problem, why does he keep pushing this? It's simple and plain. The man is an effing racist.
I was hopeful that the president would do this. His brother died of alcoholism. He understands the impact of addiction on his own family. I thought that as president, especially of red state America, which is disproportionately impacted by this opioid crisis, that he would really lead on this issue. He had a personal, you know, motivating factor. He could connect with people who had suffered from this illness, and yet he let this moment pass. Instead of asking Congress for roughly the same as we spent on the HIV/AIDS crisis, which was $24 billion a year, he never even asked for a nickel. Never asked for a nickel to combat this crisis. And yet, 3 weeks after we had our report, he asked for $2 trillion over 10 years for a tax cut to top 5% of Americans.
And for this wall, he's willing to shut down the government. Right now, we are learning that air traffic controllers are working 60 hours a week, and they're doing so without pay. If those folks make a mistake, air traffic controllers, if those folks make a mistake, it's not just a mistake. It's a potential crash. Crash in the air, crash on the ground, too many people on the runway, too many people in the air, paths cross. There's a reason why they're there. How about the TSA? Well, what if the TSA, there's not enough of them there. People start missing their flights. That starts creating a backup. And what if the TSA workers are there and they're tired or they're worried because they can't pay their bills? And maybe they're not that meticulous about their job. And maybe a bomb gets through. Maybe a terrorist gets through. Don't forget why they're there. And how about the Coast Guard? And all of these workers are saying, not only can they not pay their bills, but they don't even have the gasoline for the money to get to work. So what does that mean? Well, the Coast Guard guards the coast. That's another way that these folks come in with the drugs and are hitting all the rest, all the things that you say that you are concerned about. If you're concerned about people getting in undetected, if you're concerned about drugs, if you're concerned about human trafficking, then you really should want these government workers to go back to work. So why is this happening? Melvin, we get it, the guy's racist, but I think it's much deeper than just racism. See, Donald Trump has always done what Vladimir Putin wanted him to do. This thing that he's doing as president weakens us. Right now, we are more primed than ever for an attack. Remember 9/11? 9/11, right? After 9/11, see, a couple weeks ago, Nancy Pelosi was supposed to take a trip to Afghanistan, if I'm not mistaken. And after she canceled the State of the Union on him, he decided that he was going to cancel her trip to Afghanistan and worse, announced that she was even going to Afghanistan. See, they make these trips and we don't learn about them until they are already there. And the reason for that is because of the logistics and the potential attacks. And he says, it's okay, Nancy. You can fly commercial if you like. So peep this. Post 9/11 mindset, pre 9/11 mindset. This is the thing that Glenn Beck likes to hammer. He says you got a pre 9/11 mindset. We got the post 9/11 mindset, and liberals got the pre 9/11 mindset. So on 9/11, there was a very real chance that we could have lost both the president and the vice president. Prior to 9/11, the Speaker of the House did fly commercial quite regularly. But after we almost lost a lot of those top, the people in the secession, the president, vice president, after we almost lost a whole lot of those people from these attacks, think if that plane hadn't landed in Pennsylvania and had instead crashed into the White House. You know, when they realized at that time, hey, Speaker of the House could potentially become president someday. And since 9/11, with that stark realization, we no longer fly the Speaker of the House commercial anymore. Too important. Second in line to the presidency. Well, if you count the president, third in line. So that's why that doesn't happen anymore. But Donald Trump threw all that out the window and put her life in danger by announcing that she was even going to go there. You say, Melvin, that's nuts. It's not true. But we know from what we've learned about the Mueller report, we know that from what we've learned from the FBI, that this guy is not possibly, but definitely working for the Russians. And this, the government shutdown, making us vulnerable for a terrorist attack. You know, all of our people that work for the government, and this is another thing. This is another thing that really turns them on. It shrinks the government. Right? The old idea. Small enough so we can drown it in a bathtub. This will shrink the government because it will make it incredibly hard for the government to find qualified people because they will think to themselves, hey, do I really want to go and work for the federal government with all these talents? Do I really want to go work for the federal government when the government could shut down? It could shut down for a few weeks, could shut down for a few months, could shut down for, you know, the old wet dream about a few years for Republicans. And people are going to be less likely to work for the federal government. It's going to be really hard to get talent. Republicans always make the argument that the way you get top talent is by paying them millions and billions of dollars. Why does the head of pharma make so much? Because he's so good at it. Why does the head of this company and that company, why do they make tens of millions of dollars a year? Because they're worth it. Obviously, in that case, it's not true. But the government's not run for profit. And therefore, they don't pay people millions of dollars. Hell, the president doesn't even make millions of dollars a year. But in the private sector, you can. You can make $1 million a year pretty easily in the private sector if you've got the right skill set. And so this So he's already dismantled our State Department. That was on Putin's wish list. This is the whole honey-do list that Vladimir Putin has for Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is doing every little bit of it right now. You say, Melvin, you're wrong. And Melvin, we're going to stop listening to you. And how dare you say this about our fine president, Melvin? Yo, I heard it years ago. And I remember somebody said it to me when Bush was president. You know, because the world was, you know, the world was on our side, and the country was freaking out because they were pretty sure that we were all going to get taken down by some terrorist attack, some Muslim somewhere, right? And someone said to me, they shook their heads, and I had to know. The nonverbal cues catch my eye. I had to know, hey, what's that about? And this person said to me, America will never be destroyed from without. It will only be destroyed from within. If you right now are starving and you cannot afford your medicine and you cannot afford your rent and you voted for Donald Trump, you did this to yourself. And I make no apologies to the farmers who are unable to get their payments right now. Did you vote for Donald Trump? Then you voted for this right now. To the folks who want their tax returns, who've done their taxes early because they're expecting to get money back. And they can't get money back right now because the government is shut down and no one's working at the IRS. Did you vote for Donald Trump? Then this is what you voted for. The people that are getting all these junk phone calls right now because the FCC is not working. Did you vote for Donald Trump? Then you voted for this right now and you are welcome. I'm not going to say that we should never, ever, ever vote for the Republican Party. I'm not a believer in one-party rule, even if that one party is the Democratic Party. But I will say this. As long as the Republican Party is the party of Trump, if you vote for anybody in that party, then this is exactly what you're going to get every time. When they tell you that they are the wrecking crew, when they tell you that they're going to go there and they're going to destroy everything, and then they go there and they destroy everything, you do not get to act surprised.
This president has not addressed the main national security crisis, which is addiction within this country. The problem is not from without. The problem is an enemy within this country.
I heard somebody say recently that Donald Trump became president with the votes from the right and the votes from the middle. The folks who voted for Obama, but they were just curious about what it would be like to throw a bomb into the system. Well, congratulations, America. You threw a bomb into the system, and now you get to pay the bill.
Yeah, so every year at the beginning of the World Economic Forum, Oxfam releases a number that shows you how many of the world's richest people have as much wealth as the bottom half of society. The number is 26. The 26 richest people in the world control as much wealth as the bottom 3.5 billion people. It is a stark number. It doesn't tell the whole story, but that number, the 26, I remember reporting when it was 80 people. Now it's down to 26 people. The fact is that should be very worrisome that we are not necessarily dealing with the vast middle, the working class and the middle class. We're actually dealing very well with the rich. They're fine. And we're not dealing terribly with the very poor. The Sustainable Development Goals have allowed the very poor to be less poor. We are not succeeding in having the middle and working classes around the world participating in this remarkable global growth. GDP is up everywhere in the world. Corporate profitability is up. Share prices, despite today, are generally up over the last, 30, 40 years in good numbers. The average worker saying, where's my piece of this? And that's the frustration that's leading to some of these populist, nativist movements around the world.
So DeVos is happening right now. And of course, that is the meeting of all the millionaires and billionaires in the world, all the masters of the universe who are deciding how they, what they're going to do with their money, what they're going to do with our lives, how they're going to control us. Obviously, they hold all of the power, and they are getting more rich, and we are not doing any better. We're not necessarily getting poorer, as Aldi Velshi points out there, but we are not getting into the middle class. And the money that was in the middle class is going to those on the upper tier. And, well, on the upper tier, they believe that they do not have enough money. Now, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was passed a year ago, just a hair over a year ago. And I'm hearing horror stories now from folks that are doing their taxes. Because if you use Tax Act or any of these, if you... and all of them have been adopted or adapted to the new tax law. And Donald Trump told everyone that you as a regular worker are going to get $4,000 on average. $4,000 back on your taxes. And most folks are learning that that's actually about $323. So I talk a lot about the patriotic millionaires. Morris Pearl heads up the patriotic millionaires, and he penned an op-ed at the end of last year, and the headline is, I'm not going to read the whole thing, I'll just give you the headline, "The Republican Tax Cut Made Me Richer and Kept Working Americans Stagnant." The president of the United States is a millionaire, potentially a billionaire, although I maintain that he's broke, but he likes to think of himself as a millionaire. Everyone that works in his cabinet, or just about everyone that works in his cabinet, is a millionaire. Part of the reason we have the government shutdown right now is because of folks like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter. And I would just like to say this to you right now. Rush Limbaugh is a millionaire. Multiple properties, multiple planes, what he owns. Sean Hannity, multimillionaire. Multiple houses, multiple planes. And of course, Ann Coulter is also a millionaire, but I haven't delved into what she, all of these millionaires just telling you guys, hey, you just need to relax, right? Everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to work out because this is totally worth it. The fact that you can't feed yourself, you can't feed your kids, you can't buy your medicine right now, it's okay because this is totally a bunch of effing millionaires telling us that it's going to be okay. That this is all for the good. And what's happening in DeVos right now is they are realizing that the growing inequality around the world is eventually going to hurt them. I was listening to Bob Ney talk earlier today, and he said one of the interesting workshops that they're having out there is a group of folks that are getting together, and they're realizing that the inequality is so bad that, as the old saying goes, the pitchforks are coming. So they're trying to figure out how they're going to quell that, how they're going to stop what they refer to as the rabble. That's you and I. As working people, we are the rabble. They don't really care about us. We are very useful for labor. We are very useful for picking our pockets. But when we are united, see, and this is why Rush Limbaugh does what he does. It's why Ann Coulter does what she does. As millionaires. This is why Sean Hannity does what he does. This is why all of Fox News do what they do. This is to help keep us divided. Because if we are united, there's far more of us than there are of them. They have the money, but we have the numbers. And that's the real fear, that you and I are kept apart. That's why you and I are told that, hey, that guy over there, that guy just wants to take all your money. Yo, Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders wants people to get health care? Bernie Sanders wants millionaires and billionaires to pay their taxes? Hey, you know where he's going to get that money? He's going to take that money from you. BS. But we always do what the billionaires tell us to do. And we turn in and against one another. And we do so at our own peril. They win and we lose. Melvin, what are you saying? Are you saying that all rich people are evil? No, of course not. But the way the system is set up, the overwhelming majority of them are Republican. And they are funding Republicans. And they are funding think tanks. Right? And they're Fox News. Fox News ran for the first number of years. They were on the air at a loss because the news didn't matter. Getting out the message mattered. They're making the money now, but just fooling you was the whole thing. And that's all Donald Trump does. So Nancy Pelosi told him that he's not going to get his State of the Union. And he tried to fight her. She wins in the end. He backs off. Up until this point, I've thought to myself, there's no way the government shutdown is going to end because this guy's just not going to let it end. He doesn't care about people. He doesn't care about the country. He's working for Putin. And this doesn't, when he's no longer president, he's not going to care. But yesterday, so now you know when I'm recording the show. Yesterday, he finally said, fine, I'll do the State of the Union after the government opens back up. Now I feel like there's a possibility the government might open back up. Why? Because everything this guy does is transactional. Now there's something in it for him to open the government. He gets to go on his beloved television, and he loves nothing more than television.
But the one problem I have is that I'm always audited by the IRS, which I think is very unfair. I don't know, maybe because of religion, maybe because of something else, maybe because I'm doing this, although this is just recently.
What do you mean religion?
Well, maybe because of the fact that I'm a strong Christian and I feel strongly about it, and maybe there's a bias.
You think you get audited for being a strong Christian?
You see what's happened. I mean, you have many religious groups that are complaining about that. They've been complaining about it for a long time.
Trump is not getting into heaven. If the Bible is to be believed, Trump is not getting into heaven. Why? It's because he is rich. But he says he's a Christian, and a lot of people believe that he's a Christian. Even though nothing that he says or does jives with Christianity, it doesn't matter. He's awful and he's cruel, and that makes him good enough. So I was reading about Alan Naiman recently, who died. Died in December, if I'm not mistaken. So this is from USA Today. The headline, an intensely private social worker who duct taped his shoes left a surprise $11 million to kids. Quoting here, Alan Naiman was known for an unabashed thriftiness that veered into comical. But even those closest to him had no inkling of the fortune that he had quietly amassed for the last act that he had long planned. It's about Washington State. The Washington State social worker died of cancer at age 63, leaving most of a surprising $11 million estate to children's charities that help the poor, the sick, disabled, and abandoned. The amount baffled the beneficiaries and his best friends. That's because the Seattle man patched up his shoes with duct tape, sought deals at the grocery store deli at closing time, and took his best friends out to lunch at fast food joints. Naiman, who died unmarried and childless, loved kids but was also intensely private, scrimping and investing and working extra jobs to stockpile money that he rarely spent on himself after seeing how unfair life could be to the most vulnerable children. This according to his friends. They believe a lifelong devotion to his older brother who had a developmental disability influenced him, though he rarely spoke of it. The brother died in 2013, the same year Naiman splurged on a sports car, which was a moderately priced Scion FRS. A former banker, Naiman worked the past two decades at the State Department of Social Health Services handling after-hour calls. He earned just over $67,000, and also took side gigs, sometimes working as many as three jobs. He saved and invested enough to make several $1 million and also inherited millions from his parents. Thrilled when he finally qualified for senior discounts, he bought his clothes from the grocery store, loved cars, but for the most of his life drove beat-up vehicles and seemed to enjoy the solitude and savings of solo road trips. As I like to say, I am an atheist. And as such, I tend to believe in the teachings of Christ far more than Christians do. When I think of Christians, when I think of good Christians, and I don't know what this guy's... if this guy had any religion at all. When I think of good Christians, that's the kind of person that I think of. He just quietly put all of his money away and then gave it all to these kids, all these disadvantaged kids when he died. Just cared about the lesser among him, those who needed the help. That's what I think of when I think of a good Christian. Now, what do the average Christians think about when they think of a good Christian? Well, the dude who likes to sexually assault women. That's a good Christian. The guy who's making it impossible for these government workers to get food, to get medicine, to pay their rent, to get gas. That's who they think is a good Christian. And they think it's even better. The thing that makes him a better Christian is the fact that he's doing it so that he can screw over a bunch of brown people that he thinks are invading America, which are not invading America. I gotta say, I'm not one of those folks. And I don't understand how your brain works on religion. But if you're a Christian, you think he's a Christian, you're not a Christian. If you're a Christian and you follow this guy, you support this guy, then you are not a Christian. And he, Donald J. Trump, is not a Christian. So Trump, last Saturday, gave a speech at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. And he said that he had a proposal for the Democrats, and my God, he's got some ideas, and he'd like to really propose something. And I listened to his whole proposal. And what he said was that all these things that he took away from the Dreamers and all the rest, he said he would temporarily give some of that stuff back if you gave him $5.7 million specifically for his monolithic symbol of racism, i.e. the wall. And I listened to his whole speech, about 10, 15 minutes long. Listened to it on my way to a wedding. And while I was listening in the car, and something struck me about what he said. He said, Democrat lawmakers and the extreme left. And I got it right there. I said, aha. He has no interest in reopening the government. He got all the news channel to take all the news channels to take this freaking worthless speech right now because he just needed to attack Democrats on television again because, as I mentioned before, the guy just loves being on television.
In recent weeks, we have met with large numbers of Democrat lawmakers to hear their ideas and suggestions. By incorporating the priorities of rank-and-file Democrats in our plan, we hope they will offer their enthusiastic support, and I think many will. This is a common-sense compromise both parties should embrace. The radical left can never control our borders. I will never let it happen. Walls are not immoral. In fact, they are the opposite of immoral because they will save many lives.
When he gave that speech, he clearly had no intention of reopening the government. But the television stations are only going to put him on so many times for him to just spit on the Democrats and try to make things worse. I had my doubts about Nancy Pelosi becoming Speaker of the House because, well, it's not out of anything that she did. I just felt like when things are new, they're exciting, you know, and new blood. And we got all these new congressmen and women that came in, and the most diverse ever. And then we've got the same leader. And they go, no, we need a new leader. But she is handling him like a rock star right now. The Christian president, the supposed Christian president, doing all these cruel things to his own people and definitely not acting all that Christian, but still has unwavering support from the Christian community. If Donald Trump represents anything, it is only billionaires. And if you can't get him what he wants, then he doesn't give a piss about you. The ideas that he stands for are only to protect millionaires and billionaires. That's it. It's him first, and then maybe some of his friends. That's all there is to it. The headline from Forbes here, and this isn't a joke. This is a real article. You can read over at Forbes.com. The headline, Americans are dying younger. Saving corporations billions. This by John Tozzi over at, Bloomberg, over at Bloomberg. August 8th, 2017. Steady improvements in American life expectancy have stalled, and more Americans are dying at younger ages. But for companies straining under the burden of pension obligations, the distressing trend could have a grim upside. If people don't end up living as long as they were projected to just a few years ago, their employees ultimately don't have to pay them as much in pension and other lifelong retirement benefits. The other headline here, and this one also from Bloomberg, more Americans are dying younger as overdoses and suicides rise. So with the current state of affairs that we have, I promise you that there will be suicides that will come out of this. Each of these individual stories that we are hearing from these folks that are furloughed right now, these folks that can't get the food and the medicine and the housing that they need, those things will rise. And then, of course, overdoses. Opioids are a problem. We like to say that MS-13 and the brown folks. No. Opioids are a problem. And there are legal drug dealers in America. And those legal drug dealers are killing our people. some of the statistics here. Such a slide is unusual in wealthy countries, absent of war or disease. Life expectancy at birth was 78.6 years in 2017, a small decline from the year before, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said. Key insights, the U.S. already lags behind peer nations in life expectancy. A slide lasting several years suggests a broad deterioration of the health of the U.S. population. The death toll from the opioid epidemic spiked because of potent synthetic drugs. Fatal drug overdoses exceeded 70,000 in 2017, more than the number of Americans killed in the Vietnam War. Overdose rates were the highest among people between 25 and 54, a troubling sign for the American workforce. Since 1999, suicides have increased more severely in rural states and small cities than they have in major metro areas. We're talking about Trump country here. Heart disease and cancer remain the most common cause of death. The CDC recorded a meaningful drop in the mortality rate from cancer. However, deaths from respiratory disease, Alzheimer's, diabetes, and influenza and pneumonia have increased. 70,000 people in 1 year, more than the Vietnam War. Think about how much people hated the Vietnam War. And now we lose that many people in a year from the opioid crisis brought on by the legal drug dealers in the pharmaceutical industries. But we're okay with it because those guys are rich, those guys are white, those guys are largely Republican, and we don't really see, this isn't like war footage, right? These people are dying in the hospitals, in homes, but hey, pharma got their money. So in a Christian nation, we're clearly cool with that.
I don't believe any person is in any office that God has not allowed it to be there.
Some say that if you look at these detention centers, you must not care about these kids.
Well, I do care about these kids. I just don't know what to do, but I've got to put my trust somewhere. I can't solve it, and so I'm trying to believe that the government will do that which is right because they're ministers of God for righteousness' sake.
Mike Jones, an evangelical Christian from North Carolina, questions whether the jarring images of children at detention centers are even real.
I don't believe it. I think it's all a big lie. Like I said, I don't think that that's happening. I don't think that the people who are so-called being separated are what the news is portraying them to be.
Also in North Carolina, Antioch Baptist Church pastor Kenneth Pardue places the blame squarely on the parents.
Who am I upset with? It's the parents. The parents who bring their children to the border to violate the law.
It has nothing to do with following the teachings of Christ. It has to do with believing what you want to believe. It seems to me that your religion may not have anything to do with the teachings of Christ. It may have everything to do with white supremacy. It may have everything to do with protecting the rich and the super duper rich. For these folks that just say, oh, no, 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 what's going on the border? That's all fine. That's okay. I don't really believe these so-called, nah. No, it ain't really happening. It must be nice to just be able to tell yourself whatever you want to believe and to not have to believe anything that's true.
The mark of the beast today is the rainbow flag. You think about the number of examples, and I just ticked through a list of examples here, of people who were unable, who were not allowed to engage in commerce because they would not take the mark of the beast on their hands or on their foreheads. It would not allow the beast to dictate to them what they did with regard to the homosexual agenda, what they did or what they thought. A story today about Hands-On Originals T-shirt Company in Lexington, Kentucky, of all places. They have been found guilty of violating the discrimination ordinance because they would not print T-shirts that proclaimed a message that they found morally offensive. Now, they got this gay pride group got their T-shirts printed someplace else, but that wasn't enough for them. They came after this Hands-On Originals T-shirt, got the local Human Rights Commission, whoever they are, to find that they had broken the law. So now they're prepared to be saddled with some kind of a fine. They have been ordered that the next time a gay group walks in the front door of your business, you got to do whatever they ask you to do. So that's just slavery. You know, when you are ordered to do work against your will, what do we call that? I mean, that's slavery.
Seems to me that the concern really ought to be with far more important things. But the real problem is the mark of the beast, the rainbow flag. I've always seen the caricatures of the devil as having red skin, which is sort of strange, but okay. And so anyway, so could you imagine now in Sunday school, you know, they don't have this big buff guy with no shirt and the little panties with red skin and the horns coming out of his head. Instead, they've got a gentleman standing there with rainbow skin, and he's the mark of the devil. I question the leaders of the church because they seem to not be focused on the right stuff. And of course, all the stuff that they are screaming about seems to be all the stuff that they are absolutely engaging in. Let me give you a headline here. Anti-gay Baptist preacher resigns from church after being with prostitutes. Pastor Donnie Romero of the Steadfast Baptist Church in Fort Worth, Texas, is one of those independent fundamental Baptist churches, better known for spewing hate. He, of course, is good friends with Pastor Stephen Anderson. You may know Stephen Anderson. Both of these folks celebrated all the folks that got killed at the Pulse nightclub in Florida. But, of course, this kind of a thing isn't going to make the news. Now, if the media, the so-called liberal media, was really against Christians and really against conservatives and was just really freaking out to get them, then don't you think that this would be the thing that is splashed all over the place? And right now, it's not. And I think one of the reasons for it is because that's when, you know, the pitchforks would come out from all the Trump supporters and say, why would you cover this but not cover Hillary's? Everybody covered Hillary's damn emails. Nothing there. And just because they don't tell you what you want to hear does not make them the liberal media. All right. I got one more statement for you. When we come back, we're going to talk about Washington. Washington is my state. Washington, the future, the goods, the bads, and here's what you need to know. All right, we're just going to whip through these headlines. So there's a ton of things happening in my state that I think the whole world should be aware of right now. And let's just start right here. The headline, Inslee, that's our governor. Our governor, Jay Inslee, is running for president right now. He's making the rounds on MSNBC and CNN and any and all the rest. But heading into that, he's trying to bolster his progressive bona fides. And so the headline here, this from the Seattle Times, Inslee proposes a public option health insurance plan for Washington. Now, obviously, other states have tried this, and it's not likely to go very far because you need a critical mass of people. But it's not going to stop him anyway. His is going to be called Cascade Care. We'll see if it actually comes to pass. But this is one of those things that a good Christian leader does. They make sure that folks are taken care of. Another one here. So 1639, I talked about this in the past. We had all these signs around here, homemade signs, because people were so afraid of losing their dang gum gun rights. It said, vote no on I-1639 because we can't criminalize self-defense. That's the slogan they came up. We're criminalizing self-defense. So it passed, obviously. Washington bans anyone from under 21 from buying rifles. There's a bunch of people that say you've now criminalized self-defense by taking away our right to murder whoever we want, whenever we want. And there's a bunch of folks right now, men, white men, obviously, 18, 19, and 20 years old. To the 20-year-old, I'd say, hey, just wait a couple of months and you'll be able to murder people, since that is clearly the only thing that matters to you. And for the other ones, look, you guys are just going to have to wait a year or two before you get to murder people with automatic rifles and high-capacity magazines. Sorry, but that's just the way it is. And my state didn't stop there. The headline here, Washington State deems NRA-branded insurance program illegal. Have you ever heard of CarryGuard? If you listen to conservative talk radio, and you don't have to, because I do for you, but if you listen to Sean Hannity's show especially, you'll hear him do personalized ads for Kerryguard. Now, what is Kerryguard? They say, even if you're a law-abiding citizen and you're in your own house, someone comes into your house and they try to rape your wife and steal your children and all these other things, and you shoot them, you are within your right. God gave you that right. God gave you so and so on and so forth. But they say, hey, if you killed somebody, you're still going to have to deal with it. So you need protection. You need Kerryguard. And what's Kerryguard? It's effectively lawyer insurance for murderers. Washington State deemed an insurance program branded by the NRA as illegal. Washington State Insurance Commissioner Mike Creedler said in a statement that he was seeking $177,000 in fines from two companies who sold the now banned NRA Kerryguard policies in Washington State. The Kerryguard program offers liability coverage to people who fire a gun and has been branded as a self-defense policy by the NRA. Policyholders are given money upfront to cover costs and expenses related to criminal defense, even if the insured later pleads guilty or is convicted of a crime. This according to Creedler in a statement. NRA Kerryguard has been labeled illegal by Washington State. Why? Because it protects criminals. Quote, Washington law prohibits insurance that covers criminal activity. Now, I know God gave you your guns, and God gave you the right to murder whoever you want. But in Washington State, we ain't playing that here. So the other headline I want to give to you, this from NBC, Washington could become the first state to legalize human composting. Hey! So the way it goes right now is when you die, you could be buried, which is where they embalm you, and they bury you in a nice suit in a $10,000 casket, and they put you in the ground, and there you sit to fester for an eternity wrapped in luxury. Or you can be burned. And it's like 1 to 10. It's like $10,000 for one, $1,000 for the other. And up until this point, that's really been the only thing that you could do. But there is a researcher in Washington State that is trying to find a way to allow human composting. So how would this work? Now, it's not cheap, but it's definitely cheaper than burial. And what they do is they put your body inside of a barrel, and they mix in some soil, and then they allow air to pass through it. That way your body breaks down. It takes about a month for your body to completely break down, and then instead of being burned or buried, that you simply get sprinkled wherever your family or you want to be sprinkled. Compost, you break down faster, it's more environmentally friendly, you're not putting all that crap into the air from burning bodies, you're not putting people into the ground and taking up all this real estate, and it's a lot greener. Sorry if it creeps you out, but life is terminal, death is going around, and eventually we are all going to be there. Now, for all of the good things that my state is known for, we do have to be known for a couple of icky things. Well, one in particular, thanks to the anti-vaxxers, measles is now in my area, and it is broken out, and people are running scared, and I probably have to go get a booster for my measles shot that I got as a kid because some freaking anti-vaxxers decided that they want to listen to Jenny McCarthy or Sean Hannity or whoever the hell else pushes this crap, and they didn't get their damn shot, and now Vancouver, Washington is known by everybody in the damn nation because we brought back the freaking measles. But this from the Willamette Week, anti-vaxxers declared one of the top 10 threats to public health in 2019 as measles outbreak spreads across Vancouver, Washington. So, anti-vaxxers, yeah, there are 10 things threatening to wipe out human beings on Earth. Those 10 things are as follows: climate change and air pollution, obviously. Non-communicable diseases such as diabetes, heart disease, cancer, things that we tend to give ourselves because of the things we put on our bodies and we don't take care of one another. Of course, the global influenza pandemic, the world's fragile and vulnerable settings, conflict, drought, displacement, famine, and other obstacles have left more than 1.6 billion people, or 22% of the world's population, without access to basic care. The other thing is antimicrobial resistance with drugs, quoting here, like antibiotics, antivirals, and antimalarials are considered some of the world's modern medicine's greatest successes. Antimicrobial resistance is a growing threat. Such resistance is a result of overuse of antimicrobials in people, but also in animals. So in people, eat the animals that we stuff all the drugs into. The other one is Ebola and high-threat pathogens. The Democratic Republic of Congo is dealing with this in a huge way. Of course, weak or inadequate primary health care. Yes, America, talking to you. You, America, that doesn't want basic health care access for everybody. The HIV epidemic, and then, of course, anti-vaxxers. That's your list of 10. Those are the people that are threatening life on the very planet that we love. When it comes to things like climate change, when it comes to things like anti-vaxxers, hey, what we're really dealing with are folks that don't like to deal with facts and science. That's just the way it is. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for me. I have to split. Please take care of one another. Please make sure to get your damn vaccines. Please start looking out for one another. I shouldn't have to tell you that, since America is supposed to be a Christian nation. I don't know what's going to happen with the shutdown, but as long as it keeps happening, we will keep pointing out the ridiculousness of it. The president's numbers are down. Most folks do blame him. Everybody remembers when he said that he was proud to own it, and now he does. And if you don't want this to happen again, you might want to stop voting for the folks that want this stuff to happen. Another point, you might want to stop voting for the folks that are also Russian agents. Just saying. This is The Fire You Can't Put Out. And I want to thank you so much for being here. You can find our show on Podbean. You can find our show over on iTunes. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with you, our listeners. Thank you for listening. We are The Fire You Can't Put Out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Kevin, for producing. And I want to thank all you out there for listening. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I've woken you up, hey, good morning.